17 past the hour on the Janet Mefford Show. Well, for a number of months now, we have been covering the Sovereign Grace Ministries lawsuit tied to what I have been calling American evangelicalism's biggest sex scandal to date. And in this suit, 11 plaintiffs now are alleging that leaders and workers connected with Sovereign Grace Ministries committed repeated acts of sexual and physical abuse on young children and then conspired to cover up the crimes. Now, a second amended version of this original lawsuit has been filed. It's added on more plaintiffs, and some of these plaintiffs have even now revealed their names. And joining us now to tell us the latest is Attorney Bill O'Neill, co-counsel for the plaintiffs in the Sovereign Grace Ministries lawsuit and attorney at the O'Neill Group. And it's just great to have you back, Bill. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, the recently resigned C.J. Mahaney, the founder of Sovereign Grace Ministries, is also named as one of the defendants. What is the allegation here of his role in what happened here at Sovereign Grace?
Well, from what we can tell, what everyone has told us is that C.J. Mahaney for many, many years was the authority within the church, and that there wasn't a church rule or doctrine or habit or custom that he did not approve of and participate in. So as the head of the church, it seems that it's impossible for someone to have that level of involvement and not know what was going on. Now, some of that is going to be subject to our ability to question him in discovery and to gain access to their files, which we have not had the opportunity to do yet.
Now, this has been going on, as I know, for a long time. I've heard references before to new policies being put in place, so things were handled well. What do we need to know about the policies that were later put into place once all these stories started to come out?
Well, I mean, one of the things about being an attorney involved in a lawsuit, I'm not reviewing each of their policies as they come out. You know, they have their public statements have stated that they're vehemently against child abuse and that they did not have a policy of not reporting. But in practice, what we've discovered in the past, and in part the lawsuit is primarily dealing with what was going on, what had happened in the past, they certainly didn't not report the incidents that were brought to their attention. So I can't really say that the new policies seem to be reiterations of what they said was their prior policy. So we'll have to see what in practice they do
right
versus what they say on paper.
Right. Now, one of the things you mentioned, there's so much to talk about. I'm not going to get into the really gory aspects of this because I just can't handle it. But one of the things you mentioned in the suit here is that there were some defendants who began actively disseminating false and leading information to the police and to church members about an abuse situation involving a teenage boy, and then withheld certain facts, like the fact that this perpetrator had access to numerous toddlers in his role as a home group babysitter. So it seems that this is the thing that comes up again and again in your allegations, that people knew, but it was not talked about. It was not revealed to the extent that people needed to know. But this one just boggles the mind.
Right. On several different occasions, church officials kind of placed themselves between the accusers and the accused. And from the victim's point of view, it certainly appears that they were advocating very hard on behalf of the accused.
Yeah.
And to a certain extent, there are allegations in the complaint, for example, that they would tell a family that a court date was, you know, the 25th, when in fact the court date was the 18th, so the family wouldn't be there. They misled families into, you know, missing their opportunity to present victim impact statements. They represented to the Virginia Commonwealth Attorney that the pastors or church officials were talking on behalf of the family, when in fact that was not the case. So there's more than just one instance when families either had reported an incident before the church learned about it, or refused to abide by the church's instruction not to report and did report it, that didn't stop the defendants from actively interfering in the secular authorities' review of the cases.
Wow. I just can't get over the allegations here. How significant would you say this particular suit is when it comes to things that have happened in evangelical churches in America? Because, as I've said, this is the biggest sex abuse scandal I can recall in evangelicalism, at least in my lifetime. Do you have any thoughts on that at all?
I have to say I'm not familiar enough with the scope of the incidents across other evangelical churches, so I really can't comment on that. But I think most churches at this point have discovered at least some incidents within their ranks.
Right.
And no church is immune from it.
Right. No, that's absolutely right. So what is next here? Here you've already done a Second Amendment amended lawsuit. Are you planning on amending it again to add more plaintiffs, or what happens from here?
Well, at a certain point, we will lose the opportunity to amend, people are still contacting us. We've alleged it as a class action, so we're seeking to go forward on behalf of all of the people who were injured.